Hey there, are you sick and tired of feeling sick and tired? Join Adel Kozilski and Feige Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
Good morning, good morning. This is the Healthy You, Healthy You show. I'm Adel Kozilski, and today I'm not with my friend Feige, but rather looking at her through a little black box. She is smiling. Good morning, Feige. How was your Pesach?
Good morning, Adel. It was really beautiful. Thank you. It feels like a lifetime ago already.
It does, hey? As long as you went out of Egypt, Feige.
Trying.
Okay, today we have got a very special guest, a guest that has come on before by the name of Richard Sutton. He's very well known in the community. He's founder of the Sutton Health and the CEO of the Performance Code. He's a prominent figure in the field of business health and performance consulting. He has extensive experience in the professional sports spanning over 20 years. He has worked with top-ranked tennis players, winning Olympic teams, and numerous athletes. He's established himself as a leading expert in advising on performance, resilience, and adaptability. And Richard's expertise also extends to the genetics of human performance, potential, and resilience. He's the co-developer of the DNA Resilience Panel, a genetic test that examines 13 influential genes, crucial to self-mastery and personal excellence. And furthermore, Richard is an accomplished author of 3 best-selling books and the creator of the Stress Code app, a cutting-edge wellness tool that analyzes and quantifies specific stresses and resilience abilities. Additionally, Richard's passion for science has led him to serve in a postgraduate lecturer for 20 years, focusing on areas such as human performance, potential, pain management, health, and athletic development. And so it's your time now, our Hi FM listeners, to join with us in conversation with Richard. Good morning, Richard. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Richard.
We're going to discuss the very, very, very interesting idea of resilience, which I think is something that, you know, you've come to the fore with a lot in the past couple of years. And I think to start off with, maybe let's have a definition about resilience. People will just, you know, throw the word out. But what does it really mean?
So it's an interesting thing because we go through many challenges, and I say many challenges since 2009 with the financial crisis, and we had state capture, and we went through so many difficulties, and we arrived at COVID, and COVID is extremely scary. It was very tragic for many families. And it was a time where we finally like really grasped this notion that we have no choice. We have no choice but to be resilient. And you've got families screaming it from the rooftops. You've got businesses saying, oh, we want to be resilient. And individuals saying, we've got to be resilient. But the reality is we all acknowledge this thing, this word, resilience, as a necessity. But so often do we explore and reflect on what this really means. And for many decades, I think for about 7 decades, actually, resilience has been considered to be something that is mentally, if you're mentally tough, or if you can suppress your emotions, you can just put them under the bed, or you can handle more pain than anyone else. And if you've got grit and if you've got persistence, you're resilient. That is the historic notion. And the reality couldn't be more different. The reality is not a fixed trait. It's not, well, I'm persistent, therefore I'm resilient, or I can put all my emotions under the bed and I can forget about them, therefore I'm resilient. That's not a reality. It might be a transient way of getting through something, but it certainly doesn't afford us the best possible opportunities in the future. And for me, it was an incredible lesson that I learned back in 2007. And in 2007, I had a lot of my dreams, so to speak, come true. And my career dreams were to be with a team that could win the Olympics in a senior role. And I got this opportunity, and it was with the Chinese Olympic Federation. So I have this like unbelievable opportunity to go to Beijing. And I arrive literally 2 weeks after being given the opportunity, I arrive in Beijing. And there's this expectation. You've got the senior role with the major Olympic team. It's a big thing. The Olympics are a big thing. And you'd expect the red carpet. You arrive in Beijing. I'm expecting a welcoming party. I'm expecting Range Rovers. I'm expecting cheering. You know, the things that we tell ourselves, the story we tell ourselves. Yeah, I arrived there, and the reality of the situation is no one even knew I arrived, and no one really cared that I arrived. And that's, you know, just kind of puts life in perspective for you. And it took several hours to actually find a lift to the Olympic base. And once I got there, I thought I had this position of control and position of authority. I had nothing. I was just a number in a system. And I started this role. A lot of enthusiasm, a lot of optimism, a lot of positivity. And within 2-3 weeks, I realized that the environment was very oppressive. I was in almost solitary confinement. I couldn't speak the language. I couldn't relate to anyone. No one wanted anything to do with me. It was like COVID on steroids. I had no control, no support, no phone, no internet. No, and here I am expected to fulfill this role. But I kept, you know, reinforcing and reminding myself that I've got this grit. I can get through anything. I've been through hard times before. I can do this. And I had this positive, toxic positivity going on. Yeah, it's all great. It's all great. Yeah, yeah. And so you know, 2 weeks, I'm still okay. 3 weeks, not so okay. 4 weeks, I'm starting to get sick. And that's the thing about stress, is that prolonged stress really compromises immune behaviors. So now I'm picking up anything that's going around. And every single week, without fail, whether it's swine flu, whether it's pericarditis, I had everything every week. And what happened was, first, the physical decline, because the stress levels were just stratospheric. And then what happened was the emotional decline. I've never suffered from depression before, but now all of a sudden I'm starting to feel very, very low. And like, can I do this? And what is life about? And why am I doing this in the first place? And I always was so motivated and passionate. And the weeks passed, and again, I had persistence and I had grit, and I was taking those emotions and putting them under the bed and under the pillow, and pretending they didn't exist. And then all of a sudden, I lost all motivation. Like, it's the cognitive, the emotional, the physical, everything went into this stratosphere. Well, I wouldn't say stratospheric, but this free fall is the best way to describe it. And, you know, I understood for the first time in my life, be careful what you wish for, because one day it might come true. And I had this image of what this reality on the other side of life was going to be. And it was a vastly different experience. And I didn't know how to cope, despite the fact that I'd gone through many challenges in my life. I didn't know how to cope with this challenge. And I'd been applying myself. Yes, I'm mentally tougher than anyone, and I can do this. And what I would do psychologically, the game I would play with myself, and it's a game that a lot of people do, is use the carrot. So every day I would say, tomorrow I can resign. Get through today, no problem. I'm giving myself permission to resign tomorrow. I get to tomorrow, I'll do the same thing. Tomorrow you can resign. Just get through today. Tomorrow you resign. And I did this for 7 months, and I was broken. Wow. I was absolutely destroyed. And what happened was, I got this lucky break. I got a lucky break in that the national sports of China is tennis, and they take it very seriously, and they had some very successful tennis players. And what they wanted me to do is accompany these tennis players to Wimbledon. So basically leave Beijing and leave the training camp for a period of time to showcase the new generation of tennis players, which were exceptionally talented. And that's exactly what I did. And it was literally a matter of moments, in relative terms, within a day or two or three of being in London, that everything started to lift. We don't understand. We don't really have like a clear insight to how impactful our environment is. So we assume that, you know, the people around us, we assume that the air quality and it doesn't have that much of an influence. It has a powerful influence, because within 3 or 4 days, I wasn't depressed anymore. I wasn't anxious anymore. I was feeling physically strong again. I was motivated again. I was alive. It was just that this environment had been recalibrated, or the environment that I was living in London. And we had five.
Can we just stop over there at this very pivotal point, because it's actually quite a riveting story? We're speaking to Richard Sutton, and we're talking about the concept of resilience. If you'd like to join the conversation, 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. You're listening to the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
We are talking to Richard Sutton. We are talking about resilience. So we were in the middle of quite a pivotal point. You eventually resigned.
And you moved on. No, I didn't. So I shifted. And so I'm building the case here. So the case was that the environment I was in was having a very adverse effect on my well-being. And it could be the environment we're in our lives at this given point in time. And I get this opportunity to be removed from the environment, to be placed in an environment that I enjoyed and that I loved. And that was Wimbledon with five very talented athletes. And I was going to be there for a period of 5 weeks. And week one, I go through this rebuilding phase, recalibration. I'm feeling like my old self. You know, we've all been in those situations where, haven't felt like this for so long. And week two, I feel like I'm actually building on that. I'm enjoying the environment so much that I'm growing, I'm evolving, I'm starting to see beyond my immediate reality. And the following week continues along that vein. And then I arrive at the fourth week. Now, the fourth week means we're about to go home, and home being Beijing, we're about to go back to an environment that I didn't want to be in. I wasn't thriving in that environment. It was very challenging. It was very oppressive. It was very sad in many ways. And there was one individual left in the tournament, and this individual was in the semifinals of the Wimbledon tournament. She was going to be facing Serena Williams, who hadn't lost a match since she started tennis. But the realization, and this is really where the point comes through, the realization was that it's this journey that I was on, this 3 week interlude or 4 week interlude, is over. I'm going back to this reality that I don't want to go back to. And we can use the analogy as COVID is a great analogy. Imagine after this conversation today, all of us going back into lockdown for the next 4 or 5 months. I mean, how would that emotionally translate to one's psyche? So I kind of go through this realization, and 7 months of tremendous hardship and emotional strain, it certainly plays on the back of your mind. And I started feeling quite anxious and quite down. And I thought, I'm going to snap out of this. I'm run down to the gym at Wimbledon, the players playing the next day, and I'm going to exercise, and it's going to lift my mood. And it does. Exercise is very powerful. We saw that in COVID. We're all trying to exercise, running up and down our driveways. And I go down to the gym, and I'm sitting on the bike, I'm pedaling away, and I really don't feel like this is making a difference. But next to me on the bike is the iconic figure, Billie Jean King, Billie Jean King, the founder of the WTA Tour, iconic individual. You know, she fought for gay rights and women's rights and equal pay. And she really went through the gauntlet. She took on every challenge head on, and she made a profound difference to the lives of so many people. And I got to know Billie Jean from former clients, and we get talking. And the thing about this 8 month or 8.5 months journey that I've been on is that up until that point, I had not shared anything or any part of my experience. Why? Because I had mental toughness. Why? Because I had grit. Why? Because you don't show pain. You don't show weakness. You don't show vulnerable. You don't, because then you're not resilient. And I get chatting, and we start talking superficially as most conversations start. And she said, look, I don't know you well, but you're not yourself. Is there something you want to share, or you want to talk about something? And it was that moment, because I had so much respect for Billie Jean King and the fight that she fought, and I knew a lot about her life. I actually started opening up. I said, you know, I'm finding it so challenging. I didn't think it was going to be so hard. I can't believe I'm feeling this way. I can't believe I'm angry at myself for not being able to cope with what's being placed on me. And I was wanting, you know, I guess in these situations, when you start opening up, you want that person to give you the answers. You want that person to save you. You really want to recalibrate your life. But the reality is, she did something more powerful. And that thing that she did was empowered me. And she said, look, I'm going to tell you two things that have helped me in my journey and with my battles in life. So I'm sitting there very, like, I'm pedaling away, but I'm really eager to hear what she said. And she said the first thing, and it was quite profound. She said that pressure is a privilege. The fact that you're under this weight and you have all this complexity and these demands and all the challenges around you, it's actually a privilege. Most people who don't have skills, don't have capabilities, or not well recognized, don't have that pressure. So you've got to look at things through a different lens. Basically, you're saying you've got to reframe. It's not all bad. There's opportunity in the crisis. And I took that in. It didn't really make a difference at that moment. And it's not what I wanted to hear, but I listened. And the second thing she said to me was, and this is really the turning point, is that champions adapt. Anyone who's successful in life, anyone who chases a target and achieves their goals and their aspiration, anyone who's subjected to hardship and triumphs in that hardship, they have this capacity to adapt. Champions adapt. And at that moment, I realized that my limitation was that I'd gone into this new environment with this old version of self, this 1.0. And everything I did for the last 30 years, I'd been applying the way I saw life, the way I approached life, the way I interacted with the team, the way I interacted with the athletes, the way I interacted with the administrators. It was my way or the highway. It was rigid. It was hard. I had not adapted. It was totally different. The circumstance had changed in their entirety. And the person who hadn't changed was me. And I was the casualty. No one else was struggling. It was me. I was the only person struggling. And I really took these to heart. And the next day, you know, I got off the bike and I didn't know what to do with those statements. To be honest with you, nice statements. I just didn't know what to do with them. And next day, what happens is the player loses as anticipated. And I find myself back on a plane to Beijing. And I'm thinking about how can I actually apply these principles? How can I make a difference to my life in this given situation and really recalibrate? And I arrive in Beijing in a very different. When I first arrived 8-9 months ago, I thought I was a hero, and I thought I'm waiting for this welcoming party and never arrived. Now I realize that I'm just a spoke in a cog, and I'm just part of a process. And it was a big realization. But this, how do I adapt? I wanted to adapt. I didn't know how to adapt. I didn't know how to change. I didn't know how to recalibrate to the difficult situation, the hostile situation that I was confronted with. And I made a decision. I said, look, I don't understand my circumstances. Let me try and understand the athletes and the team and the individuals better. And the only way I can do that is attempt to learn Mandarin. And that's what I'm going to do. And my strategy for learning Mandarin was I'm going to ask the 5 most senior individuals in the team to teach me 5 words. And one of them is bound to say yes. If not, I'll go to the next 5. So I then approached 5 individuals and I said, look, will you teach me 5 words a day in context? And to my horror, it was a very traumatic response. They all agreed. All 5 individuals agreed, and I was committed to 25 words a day. And Mandarin, I cannot sing, and it's a tonal language. And it was a very big challenge. It became quite humorous. I became almost the team clown or jester or whatever the phrase is, because I was trying so hard and I sounded so ridiculous. I could never really communicate well, but it showed vulnerability. It showed the fact that I was trying. It showed the fact that I wanted to connect. It showed the fact that I was making an effort. It showed the fact that I wanted to be different. I wanted things to be different. And all of a sudden what happened is the walls, the barriers, the obstacles, the everything in front of me started to recede. And I started seeing the experience from their perspective, the hardships from their perspective, not only from mine. And up until that point, it was all about me and my reality and my world and how hard life is and how unjust the situation is. And all of a sudden, I start seeing their perspective. It was much tougher than mine, to be quite frank. And they started letting me in. And I started having more support and I had more camaraderie and more interaction. And the experience that was so tough for so many months, all of a sudden, became like man, this is not bad. I'm starting to enjoy it. So for the vast majority of my time there, I wanted to resign, get out of here. I never want to be back here. And then all of a sudden, hey, this is a great experience. These athletes are really incredible people. The administrator, the coaches, these are like really good down to earth individuals. And you know, the days passed and it got easier. And a lot had to do with the social support, the social connected, and the fact that I was changing, seeing things differently, going out in Beijing, experiencing the culture, becoming enriched by the environment. And then what happened was the day I'd been waiting for the last year or over a year, the day I'd been waiting for, the Olympic Games arrived. And the team, it was the hardest 2 weeks of my life, but in a constructive way. The team won the Olympic Games, first time in history. And I'm sitting, you know, the day after the Olympic Games, the closing ceremony, I'm sitting in front of one of the key administrators, and this is it. This for 12, 14, 15 months, I wanted to resign, get out of there. And the administrator says, look, we're very pleased with the outcome. This we didn't expect it. We're very pleased with the outcome. We really want you, encourage you to sign on for the next Olympic Games, another 4 years. So what did I do? I love the experience so much. I signed on. So I stayed there for another 3.5 years until I got another job offer. But the point is, and I think, you know, it was a very kind of long-winded way of arriving at this point, is we think it's persistence and grit and mental toughness and emotional spirit. It's not. Resilience is the ability to adapt, to change mentally, emotionally, physically, when confronted with stress and challenge and hardship and complexity and uncertainty. And if we can do that well, there's nothing in life we can't overcome. And yes, there is pain. Yes, there is disappointment. Yes, there is resentment. Yes, there is anger. There's all of these emotions come into play. But it's the ability to get across the line, not compromised and not depleted and not destroyed. And ultimately, it's us who destroy ourselves.
It's very interesting what you're saying. And I'm going to bring something in that I have been chewing on for a long time. And actually, you know, the universe like delivered some podcasts that actually explored it more. And that is that it seems that our generation, we've been labeled cycle breakers. I don't know if you've heard this term. I didn't really hear the term, but I identify with it. And that is that we've had to learn how to do things differently, or we've chosen of our own volition to do things differently, say, from the previous generation. Now, as you were talking, you know, you were saying that resilience was once defined as just grit, just get through it. And when we look back at our previous generations, the ones that lived through the horrors of World War II and back, and them not having all the conveniences and facilities we have today, I guess resilience was what it was, you know, defined it, that you just took your emotions, you put it under the bed, and you got up and you went to work and you just fought for your physical survival. And I think today the consciousness has changed, that we're not, thank God, hopefully not at war, okay? We've got so much more than our previous generations have, and we've actually started looking and saying, no, it's not good for me to put my emotions under the bed. No, maybe I should be looking at things differently. Maybe I should be raising my children differently, say, to my parents. Or maybe I should be looking at what it means getting a job in a different way. And I think resilience has gone through that metamorphosis. I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, I think it's very well articulated what you said. It's extraordinarily well articulated. And I think that there were different times. Sometimes we're just, you know, there were eras where it's just about survival. And survival is, if we get across the line at all, that's a gift. And that's going to require everything we got to get across the line. And we do live in a different time. And so we have this opportunity to get across the line. And the opportunity is, are we going to get across the line compromised, depleted, drained, injured, ill? Or are we going to get across the line stronger and more and wiser and more clear and with the capacity to contribute more to others and life? And that is this adaptability piece. And it is we're living in different times. And that's perhaps why this definition is more appropriate than it was before. But it's not to say that grit is not important, persistence is not important. These are components. But they didn't serve me particularly well at all in that environment. Yes, I managed to get to the end, but I could have been destroyed on every level to ways that I wouldn't even begin to imagine that would certainly be present at this stage of my life. So it really was a decision that was important to make.
Richard, you mentioned earlier about an environment, and how when you went to London, your environment changed and your atmosphere changed, and you kind of enjoyed that more than Beijing, correct?
Exponentially. I was in an old environment. I had friends. There was social connection. The air was clean. It was like.
But then you signed on another you know contract for another 3 years or 4 years, but your environment didn't change. Clearly, you changed.
I changed, and I enjoyed it. It became one of the most meaningful and special periods of my life, where I grew immeasurably. It was incredible. So from the one of
I
the
just feel like this idea of environment actually is so fascinating to me, because I just came back from a trip in Israel. We did a solidarity trip. And to understand and see the resilience of the people in Israel is mind blowing. You know, it's a completely different environment to, let's say, Johannesburg, South Africa, and what they're going through, and what they're you know, witnessing, and what they, but they're just a resilient nation.
And you know, there's not, that kind of really is a great segue into another conversation, and the conversation is, how do you build resilience? What are the components? What are the contributing factors to resilience? How do we become better at handling more pressure and more complexity and more uncertainty and more challenge? How do we become better at this? Because it seems like the trajectory of the world is going in that direction. So we have to understand there's four important pieces here. And it might explain the context of Israel in that way. So our childhood and what we exposed in childhood affects our resiliency. So we think that the tougher your childhood, the more resilient you can be. Exact opposite. So the more hardship you have, the more uncertainty you have as a child, the more neglect, the more emotional abuse, the more physical abuse, the more vulnerable you are as an adult. I might be off by a percent or two, but about 30% of mental health issues in adults stem from childhood adversity. It's very close, maybe 33% or thereabout. So our childhood has a profound effect on our resilience in the future. And the reason for this is because if we're subjected to neglect or psychological abuse, we start developing dysregulated stress responses. We can't shut down, become very overwhelmed, and we can't regulate. And it's this inability to manage stress that carries over to later in life. If we're subjected to physical trauma, physical abuse, sexual abuse, our stress responses are so magnified, any little thing, and we go into this absolute defensive mode. And it creates immune responses that are, again, disproportional, but eventually our immune system basically gives in. It can't sustain this ongoing activation. And either we develop autoimmunity or immunosuppression. Something happens in our immune system that's adverse. If we experience uncertainty, when I say uncertainty, I'm talking about financial uncertainty. I mean, how many people are in that situation right now? If we are uncertainty in terms of parental divorce, how many people are in that situation right now? Then we become very jumpy. Any little thing, we hear a bang, we hear a noise, and all of a sudden our stress reaction is ready and primed. We feel so unsafe. And those are three different contexts, which I unpack in my latest book. But the reality is that the reason why our childhood impacts us so profoundly is because we fail to regulate our stress responses effectively, and our immune system goes completely berserk, like, simply put. Now, if you're looking at...
If I can stop you there, again, a very key point. Two things. One, we just got a side note from a listener that said, just by the way, Billie Jean King is married to the former Jewish South African Ilana Klotz. Well, thank you for that. That was just a by the way, but an interesting tidbit.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Fagie Stern.
We're speaking to Richard Sutton, and we are talking about the art of resilience. Okay, so our childhood definitely plays a big part. What else?
Absolutely. Adverse. And just to finish on that point is that you're looking at developed nations, about 50%, 53% of children are coming from very difficult backgrounds. You're looking in less industrialized nations, up to 75+. Childhood adversity is, it was the world I grew up in, and it is extremely prevalent, more prevalent than we would want to acknowledge. So the second piece is our genetics. What we inherit from our parents influences our resiliency. And there's seven fundamental systems that contribute to our capacity to handle change and challenge and hurdles and setbacks and obstacles and disappointments and life as it's become. So our genetics has this profound effect. And so you think that, okay, well, I can't change my genes. I don't cope with my stress that well, or I'm a little bit more reactive, or I can't concentrate, or I can't focus, or I don't handle overwhelm particularly well. You think that you're kind of condemned to this life of inability or lack of capacity. And the reality couldn't be anything further from the truth. The reality is that our genetics, yes, there's an influence, but what we do, the environment we create around us has a far greater influence in our genes. So our genes basically are responsive, you can call it epigenetics, but our genes are responsive to the environment that we create for ourselves. So there's no bad gene, there's only good genes, but there's bad environments. So if we have these vulnerability genes, and sometimes we know this about ourselves, and sometimes we have the opportunity to do a genetic test, which is freely available. But if we understand this about ourselves, we have to kind of acknowledge that we have this vulnerability piece, and the vulnerability piece just makes us more sensitive to our environment. So we place ourselves in an environment that is either supportive, it's collaborative, it's cooperative, there's a sense of unity. There's a sense of we're in this together. We're eating the right foods. We're outdoors. We're living a life that is enriched with physical activity. All of a sudden, these genetic vulnerabilities disappear, and we can become far more resilient and handle far more in our life than we previously thought or anticipated. So we've got childhood. If there are challenges in childhood and you've come from that background, just learn how to manage your stress better. If you've got you've inherited genes that are a little bit more vulnerable to environment, just control your environment better. This is strategy. And then we have to factor in the third piece. And the third piece is our personality. Some people just have that personality that can handle challenge better, adversity better. So when things get hard, they get more outgoing and more, we can call it interactive and more charismatic and more vocal. And there's certain people that are like that, extroverted. Well, there's certain people that when things get hard, they don't close up, they become more open. Okay, well, let me explore this from a different standpoint, different perspective. Or there's individual, when things get hard, they become very negative and pessimistic. Oh, the world's falling apart and everything's the bottom's imploded. Well, those individuals say, look, it's tough right now, but it can be better. I'm optimistic. I think that the future is going to be okay. We've seen that historically, the future has come right. And in fact, these challenges and these hardships have always manifested and ended up in something profoundly positive as a community or as an individual, as a family. So our personality plays a role. And you think, okay, well, I'm an introvert. Like, how can I change? Or I'm not that optimistic. I always see the glass half empty. Or I'm not that open. I tend to be more reserved and skeptical in all areas of life. The reality is it's your choice. So you can be an extrovert, you can be optimistic, you can be open, you can choose what you want to be. And it's a matter of applying yourself in a specific way. So if things get hard, instead of hiding in your corner emotionally and physically, go out and reach out and connect and share with your friends and share with your family members and share with your community the things that you're going through and ask for support and advice and give support and give care and show empathy. We have this opportunity really to calibrate who we are in these difficult times. And I had a conversation last night. Really, the measure of a person is not when everything is perfect. We can all be outstanding. We can all be exemplary. We can all be best version of self. We can all be smart and funny and excellent when all conditions are favorable. But only a handful of us can be extraordinary when things are not favorable.
I think we saw that a lot during COVID, right? Like of how different people reacted to the situation that we were in.
It's not, you can't say, well, this is me. That's not you. You can choose whoever you want to be. Choose who you want to be. I historically was an introvert. I'm not an introvert anymore, but because I was forced to become an extrovert. And by being forced to become an extrovert, I became an extrovert. So yes, there are neurochemical differences. An introvert tends to favor one's neurochemical system. It's called acetylcholine. And an extrovert tends to favor another one, which is dopamine and the dopaminergic system. So that's not the conversation. But the reality is that we're all going to be confronted with that moment in our life, that hard moment in life. And it hits us in different ways and different things impact us. And we're going to have to make that hard decision. And the hardest, the decision that we fundamentally have to make is we look back and say, I'm this because of that. I'm angry, I'm bitter, I'm resentful. It was imposed on me. We can look back. There's nothing we can do about what happened a minute ago. Or we can start looking forward and say that I can shape the future. I can choose my path. I can choose my destination. Very much a Jonathan Sachs philosophy. And it's that choice of shaping your future. A lot of people don't take that choice because it's going to require courage to change, to be different, the strength to persist through some of the vulnerabilities and the times where you don't feel that confident, you don't feel okay in this recalibrated state. And it requires consistency.
As you're talking, I'm going to quickly share. I was listening to an interview by a mother in Israel, just bringing it back to what Fagi was saying about the fact that it seems that Israel is a very resilient place, to a mother who lost two sons and her husband, okay, and really was completely bereft. And the interviewer said to her, her name was Miriam Peretz, she's very well known. And in fact, when October 7th came, apparently the president of Israel called her and said, you have to go now to all of these families that have suffered, you know, like horrific changes in their lives, and you have to encourage them. And he said to her, how do you wake up in the morning? How do you function when you've lost both your boys in war, you've lost your husband? And she said something that really hit hard, and I think it resonates with what you're saying. She said, I close my eyes, she says, and she articulated a vulnerability. She said, the pain is tremendous. And there are times that it engulfs. And if it has to, she says, I will sit down and I'll cry for an hour. But afterwards, I come to the realization that I am alive. And if I am alive, I have to live. And if I have to live, I have to do something positive with it. I can't allow the pain to overcome me. And I think that in a sense is what you're saying.
It is. That is so, that story is so powerful. The story is so powerful. And I think the point that is so powerful is that it's not diminishing the pain. Things happen and they hurt. And the hurt doesn't go away. And the trauma entrenches itself in you. Like physically, it entrenches itself. And you got to work through it. And I don't think you're ever okay. But it's to take this negative and convert it into purpose, making a difference to other people in the same situation and showing them that there can be a light in this darkness. And I don't think it sums it up like that story was phenomenal. I mean, that reality.
I would actually say the part, I had chills. I just thought you've actually summed up life and you've shown your greatness in that moment. We're speaking to Richard Sutton. This is 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Fagi Stern.
We just have a couple of minutes, maybe 3 minutes, Richard. And I guess this is a topic that we can talk about forever, because I think it's something that really is foremost in everybody's minds and their lives. What message would you like to leave our listeners with in terms of resilience?
The message is resilience is a choice. It requires work, it requires effort, it requires commitment. It's a choice. It's a choice that we have, and we have to factor in where we came from in life. And if we came from a hard beginning, we've got to work on our stress. If we have genetics that make us a little bit more edgy and vulnerable, we have to create the right environments. If we have a personality that might not be conducive to change and uncertainty and complexity and pain and hardship, we might need to change ourselves. And we can. You can change yourself at 70. And then there's the habits and the behaviors. And there's very powerful habits and behaviors, but the only one I really want to land on, I know I've got like 2 minutes on this or 1 minute on this, is what we tell ourselves. Because when things don't go well, when things are hard, when we experience failure, and we all experience failure every single day, and when we experience hurt and everything in between, what happens is we tend to implode on ourselves. How could I have missed this? How could I have done this? How can I be so stupid? I'm an imposter. I shouldn't be in this space. I shouldn't be doing this. And just the weight of negativity becomes all consuming. And the reality is you're still confronted with an external threat, an external challenge, and you've got this internal battle. So the thing I want to leave everyone on is the war is won inside first. If you can't win it inside in your inner dialogue, it's not going to be won externally. That the war in terms of life as it's changing, as it's evolving, as it's moving. So my feeling is that we have to be a little bit kinder to ourselves. We have to be a little bit more nurturing to ourselves instead of telling ourselves how useless we are and how insignificant we are and how incapable we are. So remind yourself of all the successes we had and the contribution we make and how people value us. And just these reminders, we've got to start entrenching. In another conversation, I'll go into what that ratio is. There's a very specific ratio that's worked out at a couple of universities in the States, how many positive thoughts we need to negative thoughts to actually shape a different reality, but for another conversation.
Well, we're going to hold you to that, and we'll definitely invite you back on, because this really was a fascinating conversation, and we want to thank you for your time, your expertise, and your human insight into our world today. Thank you, as always, Faggy, for being the end.
Thank you so much.
Entire show.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much.
To all our listeners, thank you for listening. This is 101.9 High FM.